Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting and I am back in the studio after another bout of the vicious COVID. Got its hands on my wife and I, but we're feeling better. We both tested negative this morning, and hopefully things can get back to our new normal. Now, according to the surgical clinic, the first records of robotic surgery performed in the world happened in the 1980s. Specifically, the first surgical robot, the Puma 560, was used in a brain biopsy procedure. The procedure took place in 1985 as robotics started to be implemented to reduce movement due to hand tremors. A little over a year ago, I spoke with the doctor who would be performing surgeries like this with the very capable Da Vinci surgical system right here in Sheridan. And this morning I am joined by general surgeon at Sheridan Memorial Hospital, Dr. Joshua Scott. Good morning, doctor, and welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
It's great having you back. We've kind of gone over just a little bit of how your year's been. Busy is the answer, and we'll get into whether busy is good or bad, depending. How's your holiday season been so far?
So far, so good. Pretty typical, I guess, season for us. So, you know, we're still working at the hospital. We're still busy. People still get sick over the holidays. So we're there and still working.
Are you sticking around for your holidays? Or are you doing any traveling this year?
No, just sticking around this year. Yep.
I'm doing a 12-hour drive next week, so we're getting prepared for that one. Now, it's been a year since you and I spoke on the use of the Da Vinci surgical system. In that time, how many surgeries have you performed with the use of the device?
It's a great question. I don't know exactly. I need to actually go back and look at how many I've done. I think it's probably, if I were to guess, close to 80 or 90 surgeries.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Myself, since we got the platform, we started using it just over a year ago. I think it was the middle of November of 2022 when we started doing our first cases with it, and been doing cases with it almost weekly.
Wow.
Since then, so.
So at least once, at least once a week, you've got a surgery to go in and
yeah,
perform.
I would typically say so. Maybe even a few robotic surgeries every week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What is considered robotic surgery?
Well, you just hit the heart of the the question there. So what is robotic surgery? And there's, you know, a lot of us look at it kind of different ways. A lot of surgeons do. And you know, I look at it as both a tool. It's a new tool. It's can assist with fixing a problem kind of better than I think, you know, just using our hands. Another way to look at it is it's a modality. It's, if it's its own kind of thing. And what I mean by that is, you know, we were speaking about the first robotics surgeries done in the mid 80s, and it was, you know, due to reduce movement of hand tremors. And certainly that's what surgical robotics is now. It's to kind of remove some of the hand tremors, but also to kind of give more kind of degrees of freedom to do more precise surgery and better optics and so forth. So it's kind of a new tool that, approach surgical problems that we've had for, you know, ever since humanity, essentially, for example, hernias and so forth. And what robotic surgery is, it's a tool to help us do laparoscopy. And what laparoscopy is minimally invasive surgery. It's surgery where you use long, thin instruments and a long, thin camera through smaller incisions to fix a surgical problem. Laparoscopy came about 25, 30 years ago, and it kind of changed the way surgeons think about performing surgery, because patients, after having laparoscopy or minimally invasive surgery versus the traditional open surgery, the patients recovered better. And kind of over time, the, you know, really smart, innovative surgeons pushed the envelope and laparoscopy, and now that's the standard of care in a lot of situations. And robotic surgery has basically taken laparoscopy kind of further. Robotic surgery is laparoscopic surgery. It's what it is. In the year of 2023, is robotic surgery is essentially the same thing as laparoscopic surgery. It's using long thin instruments and a long thin camera, but instead of the surgeon's hands on the instruments and the camera, that there's robotic arms attached to it, and the surgeon controls those arms and the camera. So it's not artificial intelligence or anything. The every movement that the robot makes is through the surgeon's hands. I think we're finding now that the technology, the robotic technology, is quite evolved to a point where it's becoming quite useful. Just kind of that, you know, that curve of technology and innovation is kind of getting to that point where we're not only finding that, you know, the robotic surgery has some advantages, but we're able to use it to look at problems kind of in a different way. We're able to approach surgical problems and kind of think about them differently with this new tool.
Now, you talked about the idea of more options, better options. Is that due to just the stability of this machine? So now we can look at a surgery that beforehand would have been high risk, and now it drops that risk just a little bit due to the stability of the tools. And so now other surgeries are becoming an option, whereas before you would have had to have sent these individuals somewhere else, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. You know, it's hard to say, really. You know, is this tool making surgery safer? I think in some instances, possibly, certain types of procedures we do. Is it safer than traditional laparoscopic surgery, open surgery? It's really kind of hard to say at this point. I think, with respect to the safety of the surgery.
Mm. Describe this machine to us if someone were to walk into a machine or walk into a room and see it.
Right. So if you were to walk into an operating room, what you would see, kind of like a typical operating room, you would see the anesthesiologist cart, you would see the operating room table, you would see the what we call the back table, where we keep kind of all our surgical instruments, and that's what a typical operating room looks like. A robotic operating room is that. It includes all that stuff, but you now have a robot, and there's three components to a Da Vinci system. The main component, is we call it the patient, the arms essentially that hold the laparoscopic instruments. So it's basically four robotic arms attached to an adjustable boom that kind of hovers over the patient, and those arms are attached to instruments that the surgeon controls. You would also see a large kind of cart. That's kind of where the brains of the system is, and monitors. Everything that plugs into the robot goes through the main kind of computers, and that's a separate cart. And then the surgeon's console. And so what that is it's a kind of a separate console where the surgeon looks through the binoculars essentially, and has two controllers to operate the robot. And the binoculars are kind of cool because it allows actually 3D vision.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of a new thing. With the innovation of robotic surgery, typically laparoscopic surgery is two dimensions, and the robot allows three dimensions, which is kind of neat.
I will say, excuse me, I will say that when I imagined what you see, that's what I saw, 2D image, kind of like what we see on the news and documentaries, where we just kind of see the device fishing through tissue until it reaches whatever it was going for. Now it's three dimensions. Does that add a bit of challenge, or does it make it easier to do that?
That's a great question. So, you know, there's the nice thing about the robot, there is a learning curve to using it. Although, you know, I don't think that curve is terrible. You know, I think there, you know, any surgeon who does laparoscopic surgery can really transition into robotic surgery fairly easily. And I think it's because robotic surgery it's basically a new tool, a tool to kind of do what we normally do, laparoscopic surgery. And so, you know, I think the learning curve going from laparoscopic surgery or laparoscopic surgeon going into a robotic surgery is not so bad, but there is a little bit of adjustment, and going from a two dimension to a three dimension kind of thing does, you know, require a little bit of adjustment, but it's really not that bad. It's something that because it's so useful, I think your brain as a surgeon really kind of gets used to it fairly quickly, and there's the advantage from that for that as well.
Now, describe how you use this I would say from the very beginning, is this the only thing that's going to be, say, touching my body, opening tissue? Does it do the initial slice, or is a nurse standing there doing that one precise slice and then the tools go in?
That's a great question. So a typical kind of robotic surgery to get things set up, of course, the surgeon is starting. So I'll be all scrubbed in and sterile, and just kind of like any operation we do, an open operation or a laparoscopic operation. To get the robotic instruments inserted requires the incisions, and, you know, the surgeon or I do that. Once those incisions are made, and then we bring the robot in, and we do what we call dock the robot. And what that is attaching those arms to these little cannulas, or we call or trocars, that go into the, you know, patient's abdomen or whatever, you know, surgical cavity you're working in. And we attach those robotic arms. We insert the instruments that we're going to be using and the camera as well. And then once that's all done, I take off my surgical gown and I sit down at the console. I take my shoes off because there are foot pedals on the surgeon's console. I'm seated at the console and I perform the surgery there. And once that everything is done, you know, essentially, the goals of the operation have been complete. We then have to undock the robot. So then what I do is I get sterile again. I put the surgical gown back on, and I go back to the bedside of the patient, and we undock the robot, remove the instruments, and then we close the incisions, and that's it. Then the patient goes to recovery room after they wake up.
That's pretty amazing. So yeah. Is this thing got enough dexterity that you perform sewing inside the body,
right,
before you take the tools out?
Exactly. So that's one of the advantages of the robot, is it just allows more dexterity using the minimally invasive approach. So traditionally, laparoscopic surgery are these straight instruments. We call it, some surgeons call it straight stick laparoscopy, where it's kind of like chopsticks almost. And what the robot allows is it has wristed instruments. So the end of the long instruments, so the laparoscopic instruments, the robot instruments have wrists. So we can move them around just like I'm moving my hands around. And so that does allow suturing much, much easier and more efficient than without that. So it really does allow that more degrees of freedom. So, you know, the way it's evolved, you know, there's no tremor anymore, kind of like the initial robots. But this also allows a lot more degrees of freedom with the wristed instruments, better visualization, and surgeon comfort, I think, as well.
Which is, surgeon comfort,
it kind of sounds selfish a little bit, but, you know, when the surgeon's comfortable, I think cases go better. You know, operations go better. When the surgeon's comfortable, the nurses in the operating room are comfortable, the tech is more comfortable, the anesthesiologist, you know, kind of brings that kind of level of, you know, potential anxiety down a little bit. So there's that kind of, you know, unspoken, I think, also benefit of of the robot.
That's pretty amazing that it can gyrate just like a wrist.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't say 360, but our wrist is pretty close to doing a 360. There's that back on the back half of the wrist that kind of twists a little bit, so I imagine the robot can do even more.
Yeah.
Now, on that, I got to take a quick commercial break. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning, I am speaking with the general surgeon at Sheridan Memorial Hospital, Dr. Joshua Scott. Now, he uses the Da Vinci surgical system right here in Sheridan to perform robotic surgeries. We talked about this when it somewhat debuted last year. And so we're bringing him back in a little over a year, and we're checking in to see just how everything has gone. Now, are all surgeons trained in the use of the Da Vinci system, or is this something very, very specific to you, doctor?
It is not specific to me. I've been trained in robotics before I came to Sheridan, so I kind of had that skill set before I came to Sheridan Memorial Hospital. Kind of with my arrival and the wonderful support we've had with the administration and the foundation up there to obtain the robot, brought this new technology in for myself to use, but not just for myself, but for my colleagues I work with three other just fantastic partners, general surgeons here in town, and one of them right now, Dr. McGuire, is she's done some cases on the robot, and she's real excited about that, and I'm excited for her to get on that, and I'm hoping that it continues to expand to my other partners as well.
So when you're when you're sitting in front of the, I guess you could say, the console. And you've got pedals at your feet. How many pedals are there?
I have to think about that. There are, it's kind of muscle memory.
Right.
So I have to kind of think how many pedals there are. There are some pedals that we use for electrocautery, sort of like electrical energy. Pedals to switch kind of the camera and the angles of the camera. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think probably 7 or 8 pedals.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, you're up there like an organist.
Yeah, exactly. I think I just described that to someone the other day. It's like, yeah, I kind of feel like an organist.
It's pretty amazing.
In a way, yeah.
So as you said, muscle memory, though, when you sit in front of that console, you've done so many of this, you've trained so much that you just know where your foot has to go and just got to pivot on that heel.
Exactly right. Yeah, and I imagine it's similar to kind of an organist, where they practice, and they kind of, obtain and learn this muscle memory. And I think it's, I think not just robotic surgery, but surgery in general, that's what it is. It's muscle memory, and that extends into, the robot also.
Now, when it comes to your, for lack of a better term, joysticks.
That's appropriate. Yeah.
I'm not going to compare what we've done, but I worked on a very specialized type of crane that was pressure sensitive. So my sticks, when I was on this crane, depending on how hard I pushed that joystick, the result was either the speed or the strength of my crane. Is this similar? Are your joysticks all based on pressure and rotation?
Great question. So the answer to that is no, not really.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
Yeah, you would think so. We call tactile feedback. It's important. We need to be able to feel the tissues and as we're operating and as we're dividing and suturing and all that. The robot, the technology they have now does not provide that tactical feedback. As I do more robotic surgery, the more I think that it's really not necessary. And the reason I say that is what I think makes a good robotic surgeon is just a good surgeon in general, but also a good laparoscopic surgeon. So as we gain experience as surgeons, we know how tissues feel. We know how much pressure, how much stretch we can put on a tissue. With the robot, you just kind of know that as a surgeon. You don't really necessarily need to know that, if you're pulling too hard, that you're pulling too hard. It's just something that's in kind of innate in a surgeon or an experienced surgeon who works with these tissues all the time. So, you know, I imagine the innovators of robotic surgery are working on ways to obtaining tactile feedback in robotic surgery. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have that in the next generation robots, but I don't really think it's critical at all.
In your research of the next generation, is that something that you keep up on quite a bit, reading medical journals that pertain to robotic surgery specific?
Kind of, sort of, not really. I do think that, robotic surgery is the future of surgery in some form or another. Kind of where I see surgery going is we call image guided surgery, where we can maybe use more images such as like CAT scans and so forth to kind of guide the surgery. There's been a lot of talk about artificial intelligence, in a lot of different aspects. And I think surgery, there'll be artificial intelligence involved in surgery someday. And I can see that sort of being married with the robotic surgery as well. So, as it stands now, all surgeries are done with basically human brains and, human hands, either with their own hands through laparoscopic instruments or through robotics. There's no artificial intelligence yet in surgery. And I think it's just because the human body and surgical diseases are so complex and complicated to be able to teach artificial intelligence to do surgery that's a huge task. It might come during my lifetime. I hope it does. It'll be kind of neat. But that's kind of how I think about kind of the future of robotics. Is I don't think it's just going to be the robotics itself, but other technologies, imaging, possible artificial intelligence.
It all kind of comes up together.
I think so. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be one without the other. I'm just talking here. I don't really know.
I love this conversation.
I think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah. The idea, when it comes to artificial intelligence, is something that we actually end up talking about quite a bit because it is such a massive thing right now. The accumulation of algorithm on top of each other is what we're determining to be artificial intelligence as of right now. For me, I don't like the term that the industry is using, just because I don't feel that there's anything sentient there. It's not making its own decisions.
Right.
It's just stacking on top of mathematical algorithms over and over again. The fact that a human brain has got to be behind everything still actually gives me comfort. And I'm sure it actually probably does a lot of individuals as well. When your patients come in, we're kind of an old-fashioned community. Is there a lot of apprehension from some of your patients as to, I'm not sure how I feel about this?
That's a great question. I've been here a year and been doing robotic surgery now since I've been here. I would say for the most part, kind of when I explain to the patient what robotic surgery really is, they feel a lot more relaxed and more trusting of the technology. But so there's certainly, I think, a certain percentage out there are like, I'm not real sure about this, and I think some of that probably does stem from, this notion that, this is a robot doing my surgery and I don't want a robot doing my surgery. And that's completely understandable. I mean, as a surgeon, I wouldn't want, a robot, I'd want someone, with a brain doing the surgery through a robot or whatnot. And so, I think a lot of it's just kind of, educating the patients on what robotic surgery really it is, the benefits of robotic surgery, the indications for the robotic surgery. And, it's not a tool that we can fix every surgical problem with, but it's a useful tool for a lot of different types of surgeries we do.
Now, how many surgeons does Sheridan Memorial Hospital have? You have three total in your office, correct?
Yeah, three other general surgeons in our office.
And that's it?
Yeah, of the general surgeons.
As far as surgeons go.
Correct.
Now, how long did you train before you actually worked on a living patient with this device? Do you remember?
So, I do remember. So, you know, as a lot of folks know, you know, surgeons, the training path is quite long and rigorous. By the time we go to medical school and then we do our surgical training after medical school in a residency. And that's typically for a general surgeon between 5 and 7 years. There's usually a research year sometimes involved in that.
Wow.
And that's where, you know, that's where we really learn surgery is kind of an apprenticeship type of learning. And then once we're done a residency, then you're on your own. And when I finished residency, this kind of latest iteration of the robot hadn't really come about just yet. So I didn't learn robotics during my residency. So that came after I was what we call an attending surgeon for several years. I did get some mentorship in robotic surgery. I did an additional year of training at the University of Virginia for advanced minimally invasive surgery, that which included robotics. So I had a great mentor there who mentored me on robotic surgery. But, you know, again, it's kind of robotic surgery is not really much different than like laparoscopic surgery. It's just kind of the use of a tool, really. So
it really just gives you a better base and more tools to use with the wrists.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's instead of, as you described in the first part of the show, instead of you and a colleague standing over top of the patient using the tools with your own hands, now those tools are set on a stable base, and you're basically operating them from a different console.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, it's more or less you doing 100% of
exactly.
the surgery.
Exactly. Yeah, 100% of it. Yep.
And I'm looking down through my questions here. Forgive me. If we start all the way back at the beginning, what led you into surgery? Did you know that you wanted to be a doctor and you didn't know which direction to go until later? Or
yeah, that's exactly right. It was actually kind of the opposite. When I was younger, I didn't really want to be a doctor for quite some time. My father was a doctor, and really looked up to him and admired him and the work that he did and the sacrifices he made for his patients and the community really kind of touched me. But it wasn't something I really wanted to do when I was younger. But my mind changed as I kind of went through college, and after college, I started working with surgeons as part of I was in a research lab, and I really liked science. I liked the kind of the bench work, but the kind of just the bench science stuff was really quite lonely for me. I really wanted you know, to interact with people. And
I know a lot of biologists, and they spend a lot of time in a lab over top of the microscope, and that's about where they sit.
Yeah. And that I couldn't do. So, you know, I was working with some of the research projects I was involved with. We worked with Army surgeons, and I was really inspired by what they did and the work they were doing. And they were able to work with patients and, you know, make patients better with their hands
and cutting edge stuff.
Yeah, it was really kind of cool stuff they were doing. These surgeons were doing some work with DARPA, which is the defense agency that does a lot of really cool stuff. And and then about that time, 9/11 happened, and I felt, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to be an Army surgeon. I want to go help soldiers who are getting hurt. And, you know, kind of at that time, it was still kind of a long path. I still had medical school to do and surgical residency. And so I did that through the Army for that reason. So I could do surgery and take care of soldiers.
So that's an amazing story. I can't remember if you and I touched on that last time. I think we did just a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you were going to do surgery, you know, I can't think of a better training field than that right there. Yeah, you know, being in the Army, going over there, some of the injuries and the trauma that you have experienced and had to help out with, boy, that's literally cutting edge stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that I remember, the blood clot bandage that they gave all of us. You probably were at the forefront of that kind of technology.
Kind of, yeah. Actually, that's funny that you mentioned that. Some of the work that I did before medical school working with the Army surgeons was working with some of the hemostatic dressings, the very first generations of that. Wow. And they're still in existence today. We when I was deployed, we had them with us, which was kind of cool. So a little bit kind of full circle on that. You know, I was working on some of these hemostatic dressings, and I was able to use them on soldiers, you know, when I was deployed.
We all had one in our pocket. That was the lifesaver. We knew where it was. It was the same place on everybody, just so we knew it was there right. when we had to reach for it. So how did you get from Army surgeon to doctor in Sheridan?
So I did 5 years of active duty time, and you, as most soldiers and, you know, military members know, that there's a lot of movement moving around, and we call that PCSing. I'm sure you did a lot of that.
I was the National Guard. When they PCS'd me, it was all within the state. But
PCS'd. We were kind of jumping all around, and you know, I grew up here in Sheridan, and Sheridan's always been my home, and I've really just been kind of homesick for a long time, and the opportunity came up here in Sheridan, the surgical opportunity, and that was about the time I was finishing up my active duty time, and I did this extra year of training at the University of Virginia, and we considered coming back here, and it's really just been wonderful. We got a great hospital, I got great colleagues up there, great staff. This is a great job here.
It really
for a
is.
Surgeon. Yeah, I think a lot of my surgical colleagues, if they knew how great it was, they'd be quite jealous of me.
I imagine they would. These mountains, boy, I tell you, they get in your soul,
don't they?
They get in your soul. And being able to come back with such a fantastic hospital in such a small city, it's not a usual thing, is it? I mean, not a lot of places our size have hospitals this capable. Yeah. And we're going to touch on those capabilities when we come back. I've got to take another quick commercial break. We'll have more with Dr. Scott after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Are you ready to make this holiday season truly merry and bright? Look no further than First Federal Bank and Trust for our exclusive holiday CD special.
For a limited time, enjoy a fantastic 5.38% annual percentage yield on their three-month CD special with no minimum deposit required. That's right, $0 to get started.
Or if you're looking to make a grand investment, we're offering a remarkable 5.48% APY for those who open with $250,000 or more.
Don't wait, this holiday CD special won't last long.
Visit us online at efirstfederal.bank. Member FDIC.
The Sheridan Wrestling Club is seeking gold, silver, and bronze sponsors for the 2024 wrestling season. Sponsorship helps keep costs low as possible for kids to participate by funding facility rentals, mat replacements, t-shirts for all participants, and scholarships for those unable to afford membership. Gold sponsorship is $500, silver is $200, and bronze is $100. A team t-shirt's given for every $100 donated. They encourage any person or organization interested in sponsoring Sheridan Wrestling Club to find Sheridan Wrestling Club on Facebook, email them at SheridanWrestlingClub@gmail.com or by calling 406-390-2768 for more information. Sheridan Wrestling Club is a registered 501c3 nonprofit organization. A reminder to all boys and girls interested in wrestling, registration's now open at SheridanWrestlingClub.weebly.com.
Rapp Plumbing and Heating has been serving Sheridan since 2010. With all these years of experience, you can rely on them to handle all of your plumbing and heating needs. From new construction to remodels, repairs of existing systems to retrofitting, Rapp Plumbing and Heating can do it all. They are professional, clean, and courteous. Call 429-1196 for all your plumbing or heating needs. As we like to say, if you find a leak, let Dan take a peek.
Hi, Wyoming. It's Congresswoman Harriet Hageman. What a beautiful year in Wyoming. I don't think I have ever seen it so green for so long and with such an abundance of grass and vegetation. We are truly blessed. Our office is here to help with all interactions with the federal government. If you are having trouble with the IRS or VA, need help obtaining a passport, or have questions regarding other agency action, please don't hesitate to contact our office in Cheyenne at 829-3299 or the Casper office at 261-6595. I hope to see you soon. And for a schedule of our events, please visit hegeman.house.gov. While you are there, please sign up for our weekly newsletter to stay informed about the votes and issues that are important to Wyoming. I'm praying for you and your family, and we look forward to hearing from you. Paid for by official funds authorized by the House of Representatives.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I'm speaking with the general surgeon at Sheridan Memorial Hospital, Dr. Joshua Scott. He uses a very specific device known as the Da Vinci Surgical System right here in Sheridan to perform very specific surgeries on some of our residents. Now, Doc, let's jump back into the robotic surgery. I don't have a lot of time left with you, but what are the benefits of a robotic surgery as opposed to a traditional one?
Right. So I would say twofold. So, you know, like I was saying before, robotic surgery is minimally invasive surgery. It's laparoscopic surgery, and laparoscopic surgery, just like robotic surgery, is surgery through little incisions using long thin instruments and a long thin telescope. And advantage of that is typically quicker recovery for patients. Another advantage is what that the tool, I think, you know, it affords certain types of surgeries. I think where the robot really shines are in some types of surgeries, some more kind of difficult kind of cases, surgeries where we're working kind of high up in the abdomen around the esophagus and the stomach, weight loss surgery. I think it's useful and with hernia surgery as well. I think kind of affords, I think not necessarily a better surgery, but perhaps like a more efficient surgery and able to kind of approach the surgical problems, kind of think about them a little bit differently to I think could perhaps offer even, better type surgery. The other thing that it affords is for the surgeon himself, doing surgery, it's very, the ergonomics of surgery is not very good. And over a lifetime of doing surgery, a lot of surgeons, I know a lot of older surgeons, they have a lot of arthritis in their necks, in their backs, and it really takes a toll on the body. And with robotic surgery, I think that kind of offlifts some of that stress on the body, because we're now operating sitting down at a console and not kind of leaning over a patient, kind of straining our necks, looking down. So there's that as well, I think.
You know, and that's something I hadn't thought of. Excuse my selfishness. I didn't think about the comfort of my doctor, who's been leaning over top of patients for their entire lives, basically kind of doing the same movement. Everything's got to be so still while you're doing these small procedures. And so I could only imagine the discipline, the self-discipline that has to go along with your surgeon. That's something I've never thought about until just now, Doc.
It's two surgeons I've met who were kind of near the end of their careers thinking about retirement, and they decided to give the robot a try. You know, they're skeptical old surgeons, and they're like, I've been doing surgery my whole life, and this is the way I do it.
And it works,
and it has. I mean, these are incredible surgeons, but they did so. They're like, well, I'll give this robotic surgery a try, and they did it, and they said, this gave me kind of new life.
Wow. Yeah.
Where it's like, I was thinking of retiring, but now I'm going to maybe, you know, hang on for a few more years.
Maybe another decade
kind of,
in you.
Kind of exciting for them, but also it's, you know, it's easier on their bodies. So, it's there's that, you know, I think
Huge advantage.
That counts for something too, you know.
I definitely would say so. Yeah. You know, the extending a great surgeon's life's career span.
Right.
It's amazing because when that knowledge walks out the door, it's gone.
Right.
And so to be able to retain that for even two or three more years, just because, wow, now all I got to do is sit at this desk or at this console.
The console, yeah.
And I'm refreshed. That's a fantastic, that's something I never thought about. Me and my wife call that shrimping, the way you got to lean over like a shrimp. She does it at her art table.
I imagine.
I'm worried about her. I'm going to get her something that sits up a little higher. Now, if we were to take a step back and ask, what do you enjoy most about using this device? We're getting a little more lighthearted on this, but what do you really like about it?
It's a great question.
Are you ever having fun?
I'm having fun. That's another thing too. I think that it does add more fun, to a surgeon's career. It can, you know, and it certainly I think has mine. It's, I think what makes it fun is I'm able to, you know, do things that I can't do with my hands, just kind of with the wristed instruments and do it kind of more comfortably. I think I'd have to ask the nurses and the techs in my OR, but I think we have more fun when we're doing robotic surgery. I think everybody does. And I think it's just, maybe it just brings that level anxiety down a little bit. You know, there's always a level anxiety in the operating room.
I got to keep my hand steady. Everyone be quiet.
And it's necessary. You know, yeah. I don't ever want that level anxiety to ever go away. But it does, I think, bring it down enough that we're all more comfortable and I think, you know, when everyone in the room is more comfortable, things just go better.
Yeah. And
that's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. but I did have to ask that question because I would think that just being able to interact with the technology itself,
right,
you know, makes your job a little more fun, which may
exactly
sound strange,
right,
but you're not a surgeon because it's boring.
No,
right?
I think it's, you know, anyone can probably relate to kind of how I feel when I'm using the robot, when you get kind of a new tool or, you know, something that,
whether that be a drill or a nice hammer
or brand new pickup truck that's got a lot of horsepower, you know, you just kind of like, man, this is cool, you know.
And so suddenly realizing.
That's probably a good analogy. Yeah. You know, when you get something new and cool like that.
So, I've only got about 3 minutes left with you, so let's explore. If someone out there is listening and they're like, wow, maybe my surgery will be robotic, maybe. What surgeries would you say you deal with the most here in Sheridan for robotic surgery?
Yeah, so I would say the majority of the surgeries I do on the robot are hernia surgery.
Agricultural area.
The next would be some of the kind of typical general surgery type surgeries, like gallbladder removals. I think the robot really shines for really difficult, sick gallbladders. I do some anti-reflux, gastroesophageal reflux disease surgery with the robot, and I think the robot is a very useful tool for that type as well.
Well, that's amazing. Now, hernias, I would think, I don't know the name of the surgery, but to go in and get the appendix out, is that something that you see and do quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. So that's probably the most common or second most common surgery that a general surgeon does. You know, that's typically an emergency surgery, appendicitis. We call that an appendectomy. And typically that's done laparoscopically, long, thin instruments and a long, thin, you know, camera that can be done on a robot. Not necessarily need the robot for that type of surgery because it's usually pretty quick, simple surgery. But for appendixes that are really bad, really sick and ruptured and stuff, you know, the robot, I think, does have an advantage there. So that could be an indication.
If someone thought, you know, this might give me an advantage, does the doctor basically recommend this or can a patient go, I'd like to try that robot?
Yeah, it would be, through the doctor, a discussion a patient would have with his or her surgeon. Kind of determining is the robotic tool useful for whatever surgical problem you may or may not have. So it's, you know, it works very well in certain instances. Sometimes it's really hard to tell if there's really an advantage in certain situations.
Well, Doc, I'm going to thank you so much for coming back and visiting me again. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to kind of explore your time in the service and my time in the service and things that we've both kind of seen and done while we were there. So I greatly appreciate you. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas, sir.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.